Showtime.
Show. I'm Bob Sansevier, joined by my Schreiducer, Tom Schreier, coldomaha.com. Now, you having the Super Bowl countdown, too, like all these TV stations?
No.
Good.
361?
Yeah, is that what it's at?
My goodness.
It's unbelievable what they're doing. But anyway, go to coldomaha.com, the best in local sports coverage by a, well, you're one of the owners and the founders of the damn thing.
Yeah, founder. Attaboy. As I said, founder, not investor.
And thank you to Tom Bernard, the Tom Bernard Digital Radio Network, for inviting us to be part of the network. We have a full studio. I'll go through everyone in a moment. But first, thank you to our sponsors. They include Bradshaw and Bryant, always seeking justice for the injured, at MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com. Smart Start MN Ignition Interlock System. If you or someone you know is dealing with a DUI, go to SmartStartMN.com. SmartStartMN.com. Get back on the road seamlessly. Chanticleer Pizza will be broadcasting from there next Friday, a week from Friday. Solidarity HealthShare, Thomas Brand Homes, Dan Garrell from the Minnesota Bank and Trust Mortgage Team. If you're in need of a mortgage or refinancing, give Dan a call at 952-841-9346. And looking for a pillow? Check out MyPillow.com. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the promo code THEBSSHOW. Receive MyPillow's four-pack special. Two MyPillow premium pillows. Two go-anywhere pillows, all for 40% off. And we'll send you a T-shirt. Send us a little proof of purchase. We are joined by Kevin Cusick from the Pioneer Press. Just back from Boise within the last 48 or 72 hours.
48.
Brian Miller. Find him at BrianMillerComedy.com or at RealBrianMiller. And Jeff O'Brien, business and leisure attorney, and budding author and bestseller, mm-hmm. best-selling author, Jeff O'Brien. How's the book coming? How many chapters in are you?
It's in process. it's halfway done. Because my co-author has the other half done.
I love the thing you put on Facebook that was it City Pages that a thing.
Yeah,
on?
There was three breweries that were referenced in the story. Two of them are my clients, and one is not making the book.
That's what I thought was funny. Is that putting a little subtle pressure? There'll be clients before
just
long.
Just saying.
No, just saying. Now, I wanted to ask all of you this question. And for first, how is Boise? I mean, was it nice, good weather? What did you?
Yeah, it's a great town. It's very much like Madison because they've got Boise State University, so they've got a decent-sized college, and that's the capital. So they've got a little bit of money, a little bit of youth culture. That combination is really good.
It is that kind of vibrant town the way Madison is, especially, were there any basketball games over the weekend or any anything going on there?
I mean, it was Super Bowl weekend, so that's everything was kind of revolving around. It's smaller than Madison, but not much.
So were there Patriot fans and Falcon fans, or was there one that they shaded toward over the other?
I watched it at the comedy club, and I was the only person who knew anything about football. It was a bunch of clueless comedians and me screaming at the screen. So
did you care? I mean, I know that obviously you did writing with Kostaki Economopoulos. Were you pulling for his Falcons?
I didn't know how much I cared until the Patriots started coming back, and I became increasingly irate and despondent.
Was that because the coach, the owner, and the quarterback are all Trump fans, or were you separate from
that? Well, he left. He lost faith right away, of course. They're losers. He left his own Super Bowl party, so he didn't see him come back.
Hey, he had government business, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Right. Yeah, he had to go watch CNN for 9.5 more hours and shout at Don Lemon like I was shouting at the Super Bowl. But it wasn't even that. I don't know. It was kind of a bummer. What irritated me was that somehow the Patriots managed to turn themselves into underdogs. That was the most despicable thing they've ever done. Is somehow like, oh, we're behind. Everyone feel bad for us. No, you're the empire. We
but
should
at
be
least
delighting.
They honestly did that. They honestly fell behind 28-3.
That's true.
It was not a fluke. They got their ass kicked for 2.5 quarters.
I mean, the Patriots came back, but the Falcons collapsed as much as the Patriots came back.
Yeah.
It was an epic collapse.
Oh, it was. You could not have been more accommodating when it comes to collapses.
There was about 12 plays in a sequence like dominoes, where if Atlanta did something different here or here or here or here, the whole sequence of dominoes cannot fall.
The Falcons are already decided. They're getting a new defensive coordinator.
They
got rid of the guy that they had. Richard was
it Smith? And the line coach also.
I don't really blame him for what happened. I blame Shanahan for what happened not just running the ball three.
Where it started going bad, and everyone's talking about the abominable play calling after the all-time catch by Julio Jones with 4.5 minutes left. All you got to do is run three plays, kick a field goal, the clock will be down to 2 minutes, and you have a 2-score lead. Easy. Anyone who plays Madden knows how to do that. The yes. bad one was earlier when it was still a 16-point game, 28-12, third and one. And I think Atlanta had it on their own 40.
Seven-step drop.
At that point, they were averaging almost 8 yards a carry. And instead, they do the seven-step drop, fumble, Patriots recover. A few minutes later, one-score game. From that point on, it was Atlanta was almost waiting to lose with occasional brilliant plays to kind of stem the damage. The long pass to Freeman to get them down past midfield, then the Julio Jones catch. But not everyone got the memo, and eventually...
Well, their defense was gassed. They were on the field for 90
and that,
plays.
That was from the first part of the game. Even when Atlanta was winning big, it was almost a 2-1 ratio.
But see, that's not the coordinator's fault. I don't know that the defensive coordinator could have done much different other than telling his guys don't hold on every single play.
That was the one thing. There was the one drive where it was three consecutive first downs were from holding penalty.
What wants to happen is, remember Kyle Shanahan lost his playbook. Perhaps what happened is they found the Vikings playbook from 1998 NFC Championship game and decided to just improv the second half. Yeah.
I actually was waiting for because I was going to rip him for it. Brady didn't take a knee on that final the final play of the game of regulation. They faked the knee.
They did the trick play.
It was like a little fumble rooski.
Yeah. You see, he lost his jersey. Like this is a
second time he's done it though. He did it. After the Seattle win in the Super Bowl, his jersey disappeared.
Someone has some valuable jerseys.
But why does Putin stole it?
What's that?
Putin stole it.
Putin's got it.
He already got the Super Bowl ring. Now he's got the jersey to go with it.
It's a conspiracy. I lost my jersey. Someone took my jersey. Then someone will put it up there for at auction or something. And then he's in for half the proceeds on it probably.
Oh, yeah. Poor you is what I
but
say about that.
There was such inevitability. For instance, the last drive with regulation. Was there any doubt in anyone's mind that New England was going to get the touchdown? The only question in my mind was, were they going to get the two to tie the game? But they were going to score the touchdown. Same way you fast forward to overtime. Once they win the toss, there was no doubt New England was going to score. To me, the only issue was, would Atlanta be able to hold them to a field goal
and get
a possession?
Mm-hmm.
Because the way they were moving the ball, they were going to get into Gostkowski's field goal range.
And even just, it had that narrative feel. The destiny felt like it was taking over, didn't it? Like, it was like everybody's psychology started playing into it.
Destiny has helped when your quarterback in the fourth quarter is putting every ball right here.
Yeah.
None of his receivers had a reach for balls. Now, wait a minute.
That pass to Edelman was not exactly on the money. He made an incredible catch.
That was a good catch. Yeah.
Again, a little help from Destiny. I mean, you could recreate that catch.
Arm, yeah.
You could recreate the Tyree catch, potentially. I don't think you could recreate that catch.
What made that great, besides slow motion, which preserves it forever, there was the one point where Edelman kind of pulled his hands back, and the ball is like floating, kind of raising a little bit, almost like he's doing a card trick. Like David Copperfield levitating the ball and then gets his hands under it.
People do talk about, to me, the Tyree catch is second to that one. And actually, that Julio Jones catch on the sideline, you'd have a hard time finding a better catch.
The other way, the David Tyree catch, because it was...
I don't think.
Third long.
Edelman was.
I'm not talking about the situation.
The athleticism of the catch.
Yes.
But I think you could repeat the Tyree catch, potentially. But I don't think you could repeat the Edelman with the bouncing off the feet. But the Julio Jones was pure athleticism. That was like all intentional. There's nothing lucky about that.
That was Moss and Carter.
You
want
to talk about bad play calling. They only targeted Julio Jones
four times.
He caught everything they threw at him.
Yes. So why not try a fifth? No, it was senseless.
He was used as a decoy way too much. But the thing is, it was opening up a lot of stuff for Sano and was it Hopper?
But Sano didn't get that many catches either.
No.
Taylor Gabriel had quite a few, and Hooper was the tight end.
You know what happened? Kyle Shanahan became a 49er about a week before the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
49ers are losers.
Oh, God.
The biggest friction is that, and you always get this from teams losing Super Bowls in close games, we'll be back next year. We'll be back next year.
Ask Carolina how that worked out.
Yeah.
Atlanta probably doesn't finish above 500 next year because they're going to have this lording over them. And what may be lording over them to begin with is there's a very good chance that's going to be the opening game Thursday night of week one. It's always going to be the champion at home. You look at New England's schedule next year, there's a very good likelihood they're just going to have the Falcons go in there.
Did you see the Bruins fired their coach during the parade? Claude Julien, 10 years, won a Stanley Cup with the Bruins.
That's cowardice.
Fire his ass during the parade.
Wow. It's because it wouldn't be as noticed.
Yeah, literally, they're just trying to hide it. Like, yeah.
It's actually like pretty smart. Like,
let's make him get up the back of the truck. No, you're walking the rest of the way.
Patriots
what
won
was
five
funny,
in
though,
16
yesterday,
years.
At one point, I was channel flipping, and I had on one of the New England sports networks that simulcasts on the radio, and the radio, they were talking about what a cowardly act this was by the Bruins. So they, you know, they tried to bury it, but in Boston, people still were talking about what the Bruins did.
Hey, let's take a quick break. When we get back, I want to ask all of your opinions, because I posted something on Facebook, and people went to, I mean, they got, it was heated, or has been still going on. California, $443 billion in debt, has hired the law firm of former legal attorney or Attorney General Eric Holder at $400,000 a month or nearly $500,000 a year to help develop legal strategies against the Trump administration. Any real work, by the way, would be extra according to the contract they have. That's just the retainer. And we have an attorney here. We'll get his view along with Brian's and Kevin's and Tom's.
How many $500,000 a year retainers do you have?
Several?
Yeah, you bet.
Well, I think every one of those breweries.
I got to get the book published first. Then
the third brewery said no more than $450.
Oh, God.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Justice for the injured. It's more than just a slogan at Bradshaw and Bryant. Most of the time, you don't need a lawyer, but there may come a time when you do. For many people, it's when they're involved in an accident. If you're in an accident and you're injured, you need an attorney. You need Bradshaw and Bryant. The law firm of Bradshaw and Bryant will make sure you know your rights. Many insurance companies don't want you to get an attorney, which is the best reason to get an attorney. And if you need one, you need to talk to Bradshaw and Bryant. They deal with the insurance companies. They settle things for you. There are no out-of-pocket expenses. It won't cost you anything. They don't get paid unless you do. The attorneys representing you at Bradshaw and Bryant know what to do because they've done it before many, many times. Bradshaw and Bryant will use every legal tool at their disposal to protect your rights. Be an advocate for you and see that you're treated fairly. So if you need an attorney, give Bradshaw and Bryant a call at 800-770-7008. That's 800-770-7008. Or visit their website at MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com. That's MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com. They're the attorneys to contact when you need help. They're the attorneys who will give you the help you need. Smart Start MN Ignition Interlock System knows getting a DUI can be a difficult time in your life. Besides the stigma and embarrassment of having a DUI, you have to worry about the possibility of losing your driving privileges. If that happens, you need to have a Smart Start Ignition Interlock System installed in your vehicle. The Smart Start Ignition Interlock System prevents a vehicle from operating if you've been drinking. With a Smart Start system installed in your vehicle, the state has to restore your driving privileges. Smart Start now is offering to come to your home or business to install its ignition interlock system. Smart Start has been available for nearly a decade, and it is the only locally owned and operated ignition interlock company approved in Minnesota. Smart Start has been involved in the crafting of Minnesota's ignition interlock program, and Smart Start representatives give seminars throughout Minnesota to clients, lawyers, and legislators. The people at Smart Start know it's a difficult time when you get a DUI. You'll find them to be compassionate, knowledgeable, and caring. And they can answer all your questions. Smart Start is run by attorneys who know the law. For more information, go to smartstartmn.com. That's smartstartmn.com or call 952-224-7050. 952-224-7050. And that's where you need to go if you get a DUI.
We are back. Kevin Cusick from the Pioneer Press. Brian Miller. Brian Miller Comedy. At Real Brian Miller on Twitter. I get that right?
Yep.
Yes, I did. Tuesday night at Fargo on Valentine's
Day.
Yeah,
at the House of Usher. Actually, I think it's called Usher's House, but I call it the House of Usher. Because it's funnier that way.
Tom Schreier from ColdOmaha.com. Business and leisure attorney extraordinaire, Jeff O'Brien. Now, during the break, we were talking about the Sean Spicer bit on Saturday Night Live that Melissa McCarthy, I thought she was terrific. Kevin, I think the buildup, you were over, it was over inflated for you.
I had about 20 people tell me, you got to watch this, you got to watch this.
But it was funny.
It was funny, but it was just, it was not, as a, as we were just talking, it's not the funniest Melissa McCarthy's SNL bit I've ever seen.
See, I didn't see the other one. I'll have to look that
when
one up.
When she was the secretly recorded tapes of the Rutgers practice when she was like the Rutgers basketball coach, and she's throwing toasters at the players because you're toast. That was that had tears running down my eyes. Now, but it was very funny, but it's like anything else that goes out there on the internet now and becomes a viral thing. It's never quite as good as everyone says it.
But now there's the, and Brian, you've all heard this too, that SNL has asked Rosie O'Donnell, who Trump and her hate each other, to play Steve Bannon, because apparently Donald Trump, the reason he was so mad about the Spicer thing is he didn't like the fact that they used a woman to play Sean Spicer. I guess he found it emasculating.
But what does Steve Bannon look and sound like? No one knows.
They know what he looks
perfect.
Like.
That's perfect. That's actually what
that's
we know what
it looks like. That's why the Melissa McCarthy thing was so brilliant, was because she nailed the nervous tics and stuff of Spicer.
But Steve Bannon is jowly and he has long hair. And that is going to be really easy to work with. I guarantee you, stubble her up, you know, give her salt and pepper.
The sad thing about the Melissa McCarthy thing is she's only going to be able to do it for about 6 months because he's going to be thrown overboard
very quickly.
Oh, he's going to be the first to go. Enjoy Sean Spicer
while you got him, because you can't even think of the second worst press secretary in history.
I don't think he's so far off the charts.
I don't think
Rosie as Steve Bannon is going to work, because the funny part about the Sean Spicer bit was it was the typical Saturday Night Live political skit. It was over the top exaggeration of some of the stuff that he does in his
press conferences. When
you have Alec Baldwin doing Trump, or if you have Rosie doing Steve Bannon, the personal dislike they have for who they're playing comes out, and it's not as funny as, you know, as the, my opinion, than the Spicer bit on Saturday. That was just typical, the typical lampooning of a goofy political figure.
What they should do is have Rosie play Trump. He'd go nuts.
Oh yeah,
that would really put him over the deep end if they did that. Now, I talked about before we went to the break, California is paying the law firm of former Attorney General Eric Holder $40,000 a month, which is almost $500,000 a year, to develop legal strategies against the Trump administration. The payment gets taxpayers 40 hours of legal chit-chat. Any real work would be extra, the contract says, and that's according to Judicial Watch. I can understand. Let's say you're a state, and like Washington and Minnesota, you wanted to file something against Trump. You could bring it out outside legal counsel. That's fine. But why you have to pay him a retainer of $40,000 a month to develop these strategies? If you think something's wrong, file. It just seems like for a state that's $443 billion in debt, it's another expense that they don't need.
Well,
am I wrong? I mean, you're an attorney. Am I wrong about that?
I think sometimes whether it be a state or a private group, you know, when you in terms of getting something challenged at the Supreme Court, you have to have your test case. You have to come up with something. You know, these disputes don't just materialize. They have to go find plaintiffs and find plaintiffs that have standing and challenge some portions of whatever they don't like. That was, you know, the Hobby Lobby case when they, you know, after, you know, they passed the Affordable Care Act, they had to find somebody that was saying, hey, this infringes on my religious beliefs. And then they take the case to court. So that, you know, when you're dealing with a constitutional challenge, you have to come. You do have to sort of home cook the fight to get it, you know, to get it going.
So I'm off base by thinking that a state that's $443 billion in debt is hiring someone with a retainer of $40,000 that they may
it's
be
a drop in the bucket.
Well, it is a drop in the bucket, but it adds up over 4 years. You're talking almost $2 million.
Well, my
that's just retainer. That's not actually paying them to do the work.
My question is, they have an attorney general in California.
Why would an attorney general who's paid a salary to defend
the state, represent the state? Why that wouldn't be sufficient? Why they have to? I mean, yes, states sometimes have, you know, private outside counsel, but
Well, I wonder, is it now...
It's for the voters of California to decide if they want their money spent that way when the state's in debt.
But everything that is filed against Trump is going to go through that 9th Judicial District, because it's a heavily... the majority of them, I don't know what the number is. Well, I have an idea. 60 to 70% of the judges out there were appointees by Obama or Clinton,
yeah.
Right?
This isn't the challenge. The fights between the whatever the administration's doing and the courts, it's going to temper after a while once Gorsuch is is seated, and he will be seated, because what's been happening over the last year is ever since Scalia's death, when you have a 4-4 split on the court, if the Supreme Court ties in a decision, then the lower court ruling stands. So you've seen some of these cases where some of the states had more restrictive, you know, the voter ID laws. There were cases filed to in the right courts to get those challenged. Same thing with this. The Ninth Circuit has always been this way, and usually they get overturned. Judges don't like to be overturned, so for a lot of other circuits, they're just kind of like, I'm not going to do it. So it's kind of like they have a run to daylight here. They've got an opening, and they're just running through it. Once there's a 5-4 split on the court again, then it's going to go back to the way
it
was.
Did any of you guys listen to any of the arguments yesterday of the Ninth Circuit?
I heard snippets on
I listened to maybe about an hour of it. It seemed obvious that it was 1-1 vote between the Bush appointee, the Obama appointee, and then the 99-year-old Carter appointee who barely chimed in. But the other thing that was obvious was the lawyer representing the U.S. government, the Trump lawyer, woefully unprepared. Just kind of almost amateurish. Listening because it kind of brought me back to like Bush v. Gore when they had the arguments on the audio. And one of the things judges love to do is just kind of like poke holes in all the lawyers' arguments or whatever and just kind of like test their cases or whatever, but mostly just beat them over the head with the fact that I'm the judge and you're the lawyer. And at one point yesterday, the Trump lawyer is getting just bludgeons by the arguments from the judge, and I'm sitting there realizing, wait, that's the Bush judge doing it. the Washington State lawyer counsel or whatever did not cover himself in glory either, because he didn't have a really good argument for the fact that you claim this is a Muslim ban, yet it only covers 15% of the Muslims on the planet. So how is that inherently a religious argument? And he didn't have a good answer for that or whatever either. But the Trump lawyer was particularly in over his head.
I will say this, I do transactional stuff, but I have one time had years ago was in front of the Minnesota Court of Appeals, and I know from in being trained like this in law school, judges sometimes will be harder on the side that they may come down in favor of. So if they're asking if the Bush appointee is asking tougher questions of the administration's
lawyer,
they want to
lawyer, be beyond reproach.
They may have things they want to flesh out to try to highlight to their colleagues when they have their discussions, sure. And that might have been why they were pushing that. But yeah, the few snippets I heard of the lawyer for the administration, for the Department of Justice. There were arguments that I didn't really, this question about how these seven countries were selected, and I never heard him say, well, we just took them from what the previous administration had in the law from a year ago. My understanding of that was those countries were singled out because there's seven countries that the governments are completely destabilized. And they have no way of monitoring who's coming and going out of the country. And maybe he made that argument, but I didn't hear it on any of the clips that I heard. So, I was kind of questioning, you don't want to argue on somebody on the other side's turf. You want to control your argument. So, but yeah, I wasn't impressed from the little bit I heard.
Well, let's take a quick, because we got to get John Tower from St. Thomas. I want to talk to him. He's a defending national champion in D3, but I want to get his take as both a basketball coach and a psychology professor on the merits of this kid, LaMelo Ball, scoring 92 points in a game last night for his team that won by 23.
Wow.
The opposing coach said that his players were getting fouled just so that they would have to give up the ball so this kid could score more, so they couldn't run down the clock and keep him from scoring.
Which, of course, is what happened at the end of the Wilt Chamberlain.
I'm sure the same
game.
Thing happened, but this kid, 92 points. Now he's going to be, his brother is Lonzo Ball, who's a freshman point guard with UCLA. LaMelo Ball, this kid, is already as a sophomore committed. He's the one, if you saw the video a few weeks ago, that basically dribbled to half court, pointed, and then just nailed a three-pointer. So, and the dad, LeVar Ball, oh my God, is this guy over the top? And he's got, the middle son is also committed. He's got an ankle injury right now. The middle son is committed. There's LiAngelo Ball is the middle one. He scored 72 earlier. Wow. And he's got an ankle injury. But his father said, we may keep him from playing until the postseason starts. They went 35-0 last year when Lonzo was there.
How do you get a name like LiAngelo?
When you say that they've
committed.
It's
like this Uncle Lee that we really like. And I like LiAngelo.
LaMelo is a cool name.
He goes by Jello. I think it's Jello, Mello, and Lonzo.
I take it that none of these kids have committed to the University of Minnesota.
No, they're all UCLA commitments. Let's take a quick break. I'm right back with John Tower. Hey, do you love pizza? If you do, that means you love Chanticleer pizza. Chanticleer has been in business for more than 50 years, and you don't last that long in any business unless you're giving people what they want. Chanticleer delivers every time. Chanticleer features thin crust, New York hand-tossed, and a pan pizza. 11 Twin Cities locations with delivery and carryout. In Coon Rapids and Maple Grove, you will find the Chanticleer Pizza Grill, full bar restaurant, full menu, burgers, salads, pastas, pizza, of course, and much more. And there's great game day specials on Sundays during the football season. Chanticleer is your game day delivery expert for the football season. Chanticleer Pizza restaurants are independently owned and operated. For more information, go to ChanticleerPizza.com. That's ChanticleerPizza.com. Chanticleer Pizza, the clear choice for all pizza lovers. If your health care has become a burden, there may be a solution. The open enrollment period is here. This is your chance to make the change to reflect your faith. Solidarity Healthcare, a healthshare nonprofit, is taking the nation by storm and bringing faith back to healthcare, a program that honors your Catholic beliefs. If you're ready to take control, call Solidarity Healthcare at 844-313-4999 or visit their website at solidarityhealthcare.org and learn about healthcare for the common good. Solidarityhealthcare.org.
Somebody has to wake me up. This song is putting me to sleep.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Welcome to Soft Hits, done softly.
We are back. Kevin Cusick from the Pioneer Press.
Tom, did somebody break up with you?
Yeah, it's been tough.
Are you listening to a lot of Sarah McLachlan in your car and crying?
Yeah. In the arms of the angels. I will
remember. It was the first thing I saw on the screen. I forgot to set up a song. Sorry.
Funny man, Brian Miller. Comedian. Dash movie critic. No, Brian Miller. BrianMillerComedy.com at Real Brian Miller. Tom Schreier, music aficionado.
Hardly.
Broken heart.
Oh, God.
Business and leisure attorney, Jeff O'Brien, and defending national champion, Division III basketball, Coach John Tower. John, how are you? Team 7 in a row, and now 12 or 13?
12 out of 13.
12 out of 13. Mm-hmm. You guys have turned it on since that 4-3 start.
Thanks, Bob. Great to be on. And yeah, well, I attributed most of this to the little pep talk you gave us the last time we talked, I think.
Told you to kick some ass, and you did.
Well, you know, it took us a while to listen to you. It seemed we were trying to make it more complicated than it needed to be, and we just got back to the basics, the Bob Sansevier basics, we call them at practice.
You let me know when you want me to come in and talk to the team.
Anytime.
All right. Hey, you know, I want to talk about your team, but I also, we were talking before the break, and I want to get your impressions. I'm sure you're familiar with the Ball family out in Chino Hills. One, Lonzo is at UCLA, great point guard. LaMelo is the sophomore, and LiAngelo is injured. But LaMelo last night scored 92 points. He had 51 into the fourth quarter, 41 points. His team won by 23. And he claimed he had a classmate in the hospital and dedicated the game to the classmate. That's fine. But I would think the 51 points and the 23-point win could have been enough. You're not only a basketball coach, but also, you know, you're a psychology professor. The opposing coach, I want to note, claimed that he was not happy. He said that they were intentionally fouling his players so that that LaMelo's team could get the ball back. It's because they were trying to run the clock down and not be embarrassed by a nearly 100-point run-up of the score. I doubt you've dealt with this situation, but you probably have heard others, and I know you wrote a book about parents and kids. The dad, LeVar Ball, is off the charts. you know, about talking about how great his kids are and, you know, how they're going to – somebody has to take Michael Jordan's place as the best ever. It'll be – he thinks his kids will go 1, 2, 3 in that department. But, I mean, what's your reaction to something like that?
Well, the Suns are – really prodigious players. I mean, the freshman at UCLA, I don't know if you've had a chance to watch him, but he is pretty remarkable. And so are the younger brothers, and I've read about the dad a fair amount and the training methods. I think a thing like yesterday, there's two things. Number one, you know, there are a lot of ways to play basketball, right? So they were sitting him back and not running on defense. And there are a lot of strategies that, whether you like them or not, I think they're defensible as, hey, we're trying to play the way we want to play. When you start fouling other people when you're up 23 and just keep force-feeding a kid, I don't know what it does to the other team. I don't think it's respectful. But, you know, I also don't think within a team it probably breeds the right values that I would want our team playing. You know, we haven't had a kid average 15 points a game in a season for the last 9 years, and we're predicated on balanced scoring, and we lose some recruits because of it, because they want to score 20 or 25 a game. So I don't think we're going to see the Ball brothers coming to UST. I don't think they're going to matriculate here. You know, it takes our guys about a month to score 92 points individually. So, you know, that's my short take, is I don't think, you know, there are a lot of ways to play basketball, but when you get into focusing on individual things, I think that's antithetical to what sports are about.
Now, I don't know the situation other than the coach of the team last year, 35-0, he resigned after the season, after being National Coach of the Year. He's got a four-year-old and a child under one, said he wants to spend time, which makes sense, you know, spend more time with the family. But I wonder how much of it was LeVar Ball that caused him to decide to step down, because his father is over the top. I mean, I had to look around to find out who the coach was, because every place, the dad was the one quoted, not the coach of the winning team.
Coach was hiding under the bench.
Well, and, hey, that happens all too often. I think this is an extreme example in a couple ways. One is the kids are really, really good, right? So often you see parents who think their kid's going to be the next Michael Jordan or Maya Moore. I mean, these kids all have a chance to play professionally, but, you know, that said, you still ask what are the goals at the start of any game? And their team's really good. I mean, they're coming off their only loss, I think, in two seasons.
Yes, to a powerhouse.
To Oak Hill, who is a national power. So, I mean, this Chino Hills team is one of the best teams in the country, at least the last couple of years with the Ball brothers, and they're awesome. But it's still, I look at it, and it's hard for me to imagine that was good for anybody.
Well, that's exactly what my thoughts were on that. And I just, there certainly have been other parents like that. But here, the closest thing to the Ball family would be Tyus Jones and his brother. And neither his mom nor his dad, you never hear from them unless you seek them out. And they don't, you know, they are very modest about the accomplishments of their children.
Incredibly humble. If you watch their, and I can't comment on current high school players, even though I'm pretty sure they're not going to be coming to St. Thomas, but if you watch Tyus, in fact, I just saw him at a high school game last night, he still goes back to his high school and watches games. He blends in like anybody else, and both the mom and dad are great people and have raised their sons, you're exactly right, in an incredibly humble way. One of the better examples of that is JD, the oldest brother, who, you know, was a really, really good player in his own right. He wasn't an All-American like Tyus, but he went to a Division I school, then transferred back, I think, to Mankato State, and he helps out at Apple Valley now. But you just look at JD, and he's a well-balanced guy who didn't go to the NBA. So I think it does speak volumes about, you know, raising kids with the values of humility and hard work, and things tend to work out.
And you now, do you deal with at the college level? Because I know that there's a lot of with the so-called little league parents, and you've written a book about, you know, the athletes and dealing with them and the parents thing. Do colleges have those issues too with parents? I think LeVar Ball is probably an issue for UCLA, but I mean, does that happen at the? Have you seen it at the college level where parents still try to pry?
I think you're right. Steve Alford and LeVar probably have an arrangement, and I don't know what it is, but there's no question those kids are, you know, he's happy with the setup of UCLA. I wouldn't say we see a lot of issues. I think writing a book on youth sports and parents probably put up a little bit of a barrier where parents are like, you know what, I don't think coach wants to hear from me that our son should play more.
Good idea.
But, you know, we have great parents in our program. I think in general, The culture, though, is one that if you've been, let's use the helicopter parent, or as we're calling them, WASPs, well-intentioned, over-involved sports parents. If you've been a WASP for the last 12 years, the odds that you're going to just shut that off like a light switch when your son or daughter is 18 is pretty slim. And the amount of time and money these parents have invested oftentimes is incredible. So while I don't think it's anything close to what high school coaches deal with, I do think it's part of a culture that parents are simply way more involved in their kids' lives than ever before. And hey, some for the good, right? Most of these parents are trying to do the right thing. Yeah. The problem falls when a kid graduates from college and he or she really hasn't been allowed to fail because the parents have been there at every obstacle along the way.
Now, John, you've heard this. I don't know if Brian does, and I know Kevin and Jeff and Tom were here when I brought it up, but I was a WASP once. Because I've covered sports and I don't cheer in the press box, but when my now 19-year-old was in kindergarten, he was in basketball, and I realized when I yelled at the referee/coach of another team, who also was one of the kid's mothers, did not call a kid for running with the ball and stepping out of bounds and running back in, didn't dribble once, and I'm saying, what are you doing? The kid's not dribbling. And I realized, what am I doing? So that was the end of me being a WASP parent.
But, of course, that's NBA ball nowadays.
Yeah. So, yeah. It just followed through. So I'm very mindful of it. And, like, when my kids, my kids compete, they'd show horses. So I don't get animated, but Mary has taken video. My kids jump the horses. And she thinks it's funny, but I actually jump with the horse. When I'm standing there watching, I hop a little bit. Just it's
showing
kind
off
of
that
sick.
3-inch vertical.
I was going to say, Bob, with your 42-inch vertical, you've got to be quick off your feet to keep doing that over and over and over again.
I know, that's one of the prices we pay when you got that 4.2-inch vertical.
The Jordan of the Jersey Shore.
Exactly.
I'll tell you, I think you're right, though, as parents, because it is a serious topic. A lot of kids' enjoyment and love of sports is extinguished not because of anything about the sport or the kid, but because it's not fun riding home with mom or dad and getting grilled. Or I think kids have come to look at sports far more as performances and less as play, which is unfortunate. And as soon as a parent can do what you did, Bob, and distance themselves and say, this is not me, this is not about me, I hope my kid enjoys him or herself and learns great lessons, but this is not about me, which is not easy to do, right? Because I've got two young sons who are in 6th and 8th grade. We want to see them thrive. We want to see them succeed. But at the end of the day, the moment we can really remove ourselves and just look at it as a growing experience, I think it's a lot easier. I know it's easier for me to watch a game that way and just ask myself, what are they learning right now than anything else?
At least with my kids, like my 15-year-old, whenever I try to give him some advice about, again, showing horses, I know, I got it. Basically, he does. I got it. Leave me alone. Because some kids don't want to be told. And I don't think we get honesty. I would love to get truth from Lonzo, LiAngelo, and LaMelo about what they think of the way their dad is. Because there is one now. He was a D1 player, and I'm not going to throw out his name, but people would know who he is, who played locally, played at the U, and he had an overbearing dad, but there was only one kid that he had, not three of them coming through. So this guy just taking in triple or quadruple. If this is a guy who I'm interviewing about his kid while he's still in high school, he made a point of taking out his phone and showing me all the phone numbers he had of all the D1 coaches he could call up at any time because he was that highly recruited.
Well, and I think, part of the problem for a lot of these young athletes is if you don't know any differently, then you don't know any differently. So they may not realize, they may not know it. They may know it at this point. But I've worked with young athletes before who, they don't get it until maybe they're 21 or 22 and they say, I didn't realize that there were other ways to live because that's what they saw. Andre Agassi, Todd Marinovich, those are classic cases of kids who, were the top in the country or the world at what they did. But they got to be 22, 25, 28, and they looked in the mirror and they said, I don't know who I am because I've been programmed to do this.
Yep.
And I think that's the other scary part is that a lot of times kids don't realize until it's too late that it's their life and they have choices and autonomy in it.
Now, speaking of programming, have you programmed your team to win another national title yet?
Oh, we're worried about tonight. We play at Hamlin. We lost to Hamlin last time we played them. So no, we're not. We have not mentioned a national title all year. But I am. You know, we've won 12 of the last 13, as you said. And this group has probably come as far as any we've had in terms of being young, inexperienced, lots of injuries, and they grind away. You know, it's not always pretty, but I really love their resolve, and it really has been a pleasure to coach them. Coaching's a great profession, but just when you get kids like this who buy into roles, we've got some kids who hardly ever shoot, and they don't care. They play their butts off. It's great.
Well, if you want me to make the speech tonight, you put me on speakerphone. Now, Jeff O'Brien is here, and he is would it be fair to say a devoted Tommy's fan?
Yes, I would say that.
Now, do you know each other?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I know you know Glenn. I didn't know if you and John knew each other. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So did you have anything you want to give advice to the coach?
Just one question, Coach. You mentioned there that it's a younger team. From a pressure standpoint, does that take some of the pressure off? Is that part of what helps? You have a loss here or there, and then all of a sudden you just turn on the afterburners. Has it been less stressful coaching a younger team and doing this versus a team that had the high expectations? I keep looking at the D3 standings or the rankings. I'm like, where the hell are they? You guys still aren't in it, and I'm like. So, what does it do? I mean, is that part of this? Is that you're just playing, you got a young team just playing good basketball, and it just happens that you've been having a lot of success as of late?
Well, I think to some degree it is funny because we're still not in the top 25, and I think there are 10 other teams. Somebody shot me an email the other day, and they said, you guys won the national title last year. You've won 11 straight conference titles, and there's 10 teams with 4 more losses in the top 25, and you guys aren't one of them. And part of me is thrilled. I would rather we just lay low and keep trying to get better. But, part of it, Jeff, I think, is we have some young guys, but we also have some guys who are juniors and seniors who have not played a ton their first couple of years. Mm-hmm. And they're playing a lot now. So we're starting 3 seniors, and Grant Schaefer is our All-American point guard. But the other 2 starters, Jordan Burrich and Will Dunn, never started a game until this year. And so they're everything that's right about our program, that they bided their time. They worked hard behind great players. And Jordan averages 6.5 points a game as our starting center. Will averages 4 points a game as our starting 3-man. Neither one of them shoots very often, but they're both phenomenal defenders, and they're unbelievable teammates. And so if you ask me about our success, I'd say it's 2 seniors like that who I don't know that there wasn't any pressure. And we lost back-to-back games to Augsburg and Hamlin. First time in 12 years we'd lost back-to-back conference games. And there were a lot of people saying, what in the world's wrong? So our guys felt, I think they felt some pressure going into the St. John's game, and I think a lot of it was these veterans who haven't played a lot, but they've seen a lot, and I just think they've done an absolutely outstanding job of being steadying influences.
Now, John, I haven't talked to him about it, and I'm just asking you about it, but we have here the founder of a website, sports website, called Omaha.com. Yeah. It's local sports. Would you, founder, Tom Schreier,
yep,
and would you, John, as the author, be interested in maybe excerpting your book that they could put on the website,
idea.
And then it
that's
also, you know, it would also help maybe sell some more copies? Because it might be something that could be beneficial to a lot of, I mean, everybody that reads it probably is a parent or will be one or has parent. I bet everybody that reads it probably had a parent somewhere along the way.
I've read it, and I can tell you, especially if you're a parent with kids in sports, you got to read this book.
It's a terrific book.
It's a fantastic book. And the thing is that sports has, some people just kind of want to minimize sports as it's just sports, but sports, especially youth sports, have so many implications for, how these kids develop as human beings the rest of their lives. And, back to the LeVar Ball example, I'm working with, I represent some guys that are retired athletes, and so I come at it from a different perspective. So I'm a little bit more to see some of these, when these guys come out of their careers, and the parents like LeVar Ball are everything that's wrong with sports, because what they're doing is he's fine-tuning these kids for this finite set of skills to get them to where he wants to be, which is to be in the NBA and making good money, to the detriment of all the other life and career skills that they should be having. So what he's doing is he's raising three kids that are not very well-rounded and are going to have, I hope they succeed in their NBA career, because it's going to be a tough go. For the rest of their life if they don't.
No, that's a great point.
It is, and if I can add the the part, like in the book, we talk about the Maurer family, and Jake and Billy Maurer are great examples of that, that they raised all the boys in a very, very blue-collar, values-oriented home, and they both got their heads on straight, even though they didn't become major league stars with a $184 million contract. And, you know, I think the sad thing in today's society, the Ball brothers, he scores 92 yesterday, and it is everywhere. You go on SI.com, ESPN.com. I mean, this is one of the biggest stories in the country right now, so even if people are criticizing it, it's still generating the notoriety that I think they want.
Absolutely. But anyway, if you want, I can put Tom in touch with you.
That'd be great. I'd love to talk more about it. It's a topic that I think is really important in our society because it, as you say, it affects how kids grow and mature and develop, not in sports, but beyond that.
John, as always, thank you so much. And I've learned from another coach at St. Thomas, I'm not going to say good luck. Just go kick some ass and tell those players to get off their ass and kick some ass.
Hey, we will do our best. It's always great to talk with you guys. Thanks, Bob.
All right, take care, John.
Thanks.
John Tower, coach at St. Thomas. Now, I got to ask Brian Miller this question. Are there comedy parents? I mean, are there young comedians where they're like parents are there telling everybody how funny their kid is? Or I mean, is there any kind of a comparable with comedy? Because I would doubt that there is some of that.
It's the opposite, actually.
They won't let the parents
usually
come?
Your parents don't give you enough attention at all, and you become a comedian, really. Most comedians are the youngest. Funny. If you go to downstairs at Acme on a Monday night and say, raise your hand if you're the youngest or second youngest kid in the family, you'll get a lot of hands.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I would think it's the middle, because the middle child usually feels kind of left out. That you know, like, one's the baby and one's the first.
There's maybe an element of that. I mean, it's mostly the youngest, because nobody listens to the youngest and nobody takes you seriously. So if someone's going to take you seriously, you might as well just go for shock value.
Pretty amazing.
That's me.
So you're the youngest.
I'm 4'4".
That's what did it. Well, I could see my fourth one, Shane, doing...
It'd be very dry humor.
It would be dry. Although he had a pretty good line a few weeks ago. He started doing, and he wouldn't do it this past week because I wouldn't give him anything to do it. He started doing the SS show, the Shane Sansevier show. Did you hear any of them?
I've heard the first two.
He only did two.
I liked when he said he wanted Trump to build a wall higher than what you can get on drugs.
Higher than Mexican you can get on Mexican drugs. For an 11-year-old, that's not bad.
Boy, this is the name, the SS show. There's no baggage with that title.
But he also
that was really big in Germany back in the day.
Really careful how you do your logo.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, yikes.
Delicate fonts, you know?
What we should do is I think we can probably find it. I can tell you what show it was. See if we can pull that thing up and we can
the
play
fun
it.
Of them is
it's only like a minute.
Is how random they are. It's like a 1 minute, like... Yeah, like quick fire on just
the
and he bounces from topic to topic.
But his cadence is pretty. This, you know, the SS show, and Mike, oh, we're gonna take away all the listeners from the BS show and take them to the SS show. Here now, and then we're gonna do the news. Trump, and he just
good grief.
He's like
and then it'll be. I just made that up.
Yeah. But anyway, if we could, I'll tell you which one is if we can play it. We'll come back with Ruth. We'll take a quick break and be right back. Recently, you've heard me talk about the home builder, Thomas Brand Homes. But what you may not know is they do more than just build new homes. Tom Bernard partnered with his good friend and general contractor, Tom Huseman, and started Thomas Brand Homes after learning firsthand just how difficult it is to find a general contractor that you can trust and count on to do what they say. In addition to building beautiful custom homes, they are also your go-to general contractor for home projects, both large and small. From full basement, kitchen, and bath remodels to replacing inefficient windows and doors at a better price, it is higher quality than you'll find at any of the big box stores. For your home improvement projects, both large and small, give Thomas Brand Homes a chance. Call them at 612-545-5847. They'd love to meet with you and provide a free, no-pressure estimate. That's 612-545-5847, or visit their website at thomasbrandhomes.com. That's Thomas, B-R-A-N-D-T, homes.com. Most of the time, you don't need an attorney, but there may come a time when you do. For many people, it's when they're involved in an accident. If you're in an accident and you're injured, you need an attorney. You need Bradshaw and Bryant. The law firm of Bradshaw and Bryant will make sure you know your rights. Many insurance companies don't want you to get an attorney.
which is the best reason to get an attorney. And if you need one, you need to talk with Bradshaw & Bryant. They deal with the insurance companies. They settle things for you. There are no out-of-pocket expenses. They don't get paid unless you do. The attorneys representing you at Bradshaw & Bryant know what to do because they've done it before many, many times. At Bradshaw & Bryant, they believe in justice for the injured. It's more than just a slogan to them. Bradshaw & Bryant will use every legal tool at their disposal to protect your rights, be an advocate for you, and see that you are treated fairly. So, if you need an attorney, give Bradshaw & Bryant a call at 800-770-7008. That's 800-770-7008. Or visit their website at minnesotapersonalinjury.com. That's minnesotapersonalinjury.com. They're the attorneys to contact when you need help. They're the attorneys who will give you the help you need. SmartStart MN Ignition Interlock System knows getting a DUI can be a difficult time in your life. Besides the stigma and embarrassment of having a DUI, you have to worry about the possibility of losing your driving privileges. If that happens, you need to have a SmartStart Ignition Interlock System installed in your vehicle. The SmartStart Ignition Interlock System prevents a vehicle from operating if you've been drinking. With a SmartStart system installed in your vehicle, the state has to restore your driving privileges. SmartStart now is offering to come to your home or business to install its ignition interlock system. SmartStart has been available for nearly a decade, and it is the only locally owned and operated ignition interlock company approved in Minnesota. SmartStart has been involved in the crafting of Minnesota's ignition interlock program, and SmartStart representatives give seminars throughout Minnesota to clients, lawyers, and legislators. The people at SmartStart know it's a difficult time when you get a DUI. You'll find them to be compassionate, knowledgeable, and caring. And they can answer all your questions. SmartStart is run by attorneys who know the law. For more information, go to smartstartmn.com. That's smartstartmn.com or call 952-224-7050. 952-224-7050. And that's where you need to go if you get a DUI.
You're nothing if not consistent.
Oh, this is a great song. This is my Ruth song.
Yeah, but that's got to change. I'm so much more than a witch.
Sorry. It's a great song.
I have evolved, my dear.
You absolutely have. Ruth Lord, RuthLord.com, as Psychic Ruth. We're back here. Kevin Cusick from the Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com, at The Loop Now. Brian Miller, funny man, at BrianMillerComedy.com, at Real Brian Miller on Twitter. Jeff O'Brien, business and leisure attorney extraordinaire. Give your website for your blogs.
JeffreyO'Brien.today.
And Ruth, before you start, I was telling him about Shane, the SS show, and he didn't do one this past Friday, but I want him to play the one that he did, the last SS show, so that the Brian, Jeff, and Kevin can hear it, and you too, if you haven't heard it. All right,
second episode and the latest of what he has started calling the SS show. Take a listen.
Welcome back to the SS show, where we try to take the BS show, and this time we're going to try to take the people, all the people from the BS show, and take them to the SS show, where we talk news, talk everything, and even maybe talk about Trump, his wall, and Mexico not paying to it and trying to become friends with Mexico. And talking about the wall, I think the wall needs to be really high, higher than when people get on Mexican drugs, not end.
I'm proud to say that Shane did his entire...
So anyway, he's got a quick little, he's quick. He doesn't want to bore people.
You get a good line, you drop the mic, you leave.
I'm just amazed that he's mastered your material.
Mary said he has my cadence. So anyway, Ruth...
He does. We got to get another... SS isn't a cool name, though. What's his middle name?
His middle name is Robert.
R.S.
I like the SS
show. I like
show.
The Shane. Ooh, I want the Shane show.
Yeah,
Shane show. But then it could be his theme song could be sending out an SRS. Oh,
right.
Oh, nice. Huh? That's a good one.
Yeah.
Right?
That's better than SS.
Ruth, when we talked to you yesterday, I hadn't seen Facebook, so I want to congratulate you on is it 8 years?
Yeah, about eight and a half years. Yeah.
Of being cancer free. So that's terrific.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
And you look great in that photo too.
Oh, yeah. But did you play the whole video? She did 24 seconds. I'm there at the ranch.
I did not play it. I just saw it. I didn't realize it was a video. I thought it was a photo.
Yeah. There's 24. See, Kathy put together 24 seconds. It's pretty good.
I'll take a look at it. Now, is there it looks like I saw your vibe of the day on Twitter. It looks like it's a good vibe today.
Yeah. The wheel is turning. act accordingly. Change is real and coming quickly, and those who adapt and respond, not react and judge, will prosper greatly and help make this world a better place. If ever was a perfect day and night for flow, grow, glow, and go, this is it. Step out the door and live. Step into the heart door of our soul and heal, or both.
Very nice. Now, Tom, were you on when I asked her what animal you were in a past life?
Yeah, and I remember what animal I was.
What was
hyena.
It?
I was a hyena.
That's right. She said you were.
Yeah.
Hence the laugh.
Yeah.
All right, and you. Well, yeah. I don't think you've met Brian, Kevin, or Jeff, so we can't ask you. We were talking a few weeks ago about a dog's purpose, and Ruth was saying that animals can, according to the Thai belief in reincarnation, you could reincarnate from or into an animal, and not every belief has that. But she said I once had been an eagle, Tom had been a hyena. Shane, by the way,
was a noble animal.
It is a great animal.
Scavenger
killed the king. Killed the king, baby.
Well, Shane, is that hyena laugh?
There it is.
Shane was right. was a beaver in a past life.
Oh. A builder, yeah.
He's a builder. Always building, yeah, something. So, but anyway, well, Ruth, I appreciate that, and we'll...
And Brian, be careful. Yes, you've got a deal going. You're juggling. You got to pull 2, 3, 4, 5 people, 5 parts in, but you it's working.
You're talking about
put
Brian
it together.
To Brian Miller?
Yeah. Yeah, there's like 4 or 5. He can think it's bullshit. I don't care, but I'm seeing like 4 or 5 different people he's got to tie in, and he can actually get himself a real show.
All right,
he's
TV
got a
show?
Lot of parts to put together.
He's a funny
it's
guy.
It's coming together. It's worth it's worth taking seriously.
Are you working on a TV deal?
Yes and no.
Yes. Just claim it, but you got to add other pieces to the mix.
All right,
he needs other funny people.
Money people, funny people, and it's that business, so it's funny money people. But there's other parts, other people in there.
You need the Brian.
He knows different contexts that have talked to him about it, putting them all together.
All right. I will do that.
He might have a distributor. He might have a brander. He's got to put them all together.
Well, do you need an attorney?
And he's got investors. He just hasn't, he's pride. He's got investors, and you've got people that want to throw their money at you. Accept it.
Okay.
You don't ever turn that down.
I won't.
We can help you find some money.
And Ruth Lorden, by the way, ruthlorden.com at Psychic Ruth. She's at the Medina tonight at 6 o'clock. She'll be there tomorrow night, too, so you can get in touch with her through ruthlorden.com if you would like to set up something ahead of time. And so, Brian, tell us more about the show. What's it about?
Top secret.
All right, top secret.
it was top secret.
You got to get those money guys together.
Yeah, right. He could tell you, but he'd have to kill your audience.
All right, Ruth, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Kevin Cusick from the – now, what's the loop for tomorrow? You're doing a countdown,
aren't you? We started today.
Don't do a countdown.
Everyone's doing a countdown, so I started my own once-a-week countdown to Super Bowl 52.
It's only once a week. That's fine.
It's going to be countdown of – every possible list of the best quarterbacks, best running backs, best halftime shows, best commercials over the course of the year, counting down to Super Bowl 52. We started this week with the best Viking performances. Now you ask yourself, I wasn't aware there were any good Viking performances. But I counted down the top 10 Viking performances in their 4 Super Bowls.
I didn't realize Chuck Foreman's rushing total. What was that number again? 40-something total yards?
No, he got like 50 was like his max.
In all 3 games?
Yeah.
Rushing.
It was about 50 yards each. And no, he had 5 catches each.
He had 5 catches. But in terms of rushing yards, they didn't really use him much in the running game. They didn't have
a chance. Part of it was, and this next week coming up is going to be the worst Viking performances, and I can tell you one of them pretty high up is going to be the Vikings offensive line in those years, because there was precious little blocking done on the Miami, Pittsburgh, or Oakland defensive lines, and so Foreman didn't have a chance.
Okay, well, Yari was still the right tackle. He was the right tackle for all 4, right?
No, all 4. He was there all 4.
Okay, and you had Mick Tinglehoff, so that's 2 Hall of Famers.
Yeah. But the
who was the left tackle?
Hall of Fame doesn't matter.
No, because Ed was a guard.
Their performances those days were just abysmal.
It would have been Grady Alderman would have been
he was
the early one,
left
at least
tackle.
The first one might have been, I think so.
And Goody, whatever. Maybe was Wes Hamilton part of that then?
Milt Sunday would have been in the first one as a guard, but left. But
I think
Grady would have been the left tackle for the at least
the first two,
possibly the third. I know he wasn't there for the fourth.
There was
one.
A total of like 8 or 9 guys that played line.
Okay,
but what's interesting is you go down the list and the Vikings only ended up having one player make triple digits in yardage, either receiving or rushing, in the Super Bowls. And can any of you name who it was?
What running back?
Well, running back or wide receiver had more than 100 yards in a Super Bowl for the Vikings.
I would think it might have been the first Super Bowl. No? It would have been not Brett Brown.
John Henderson?
John Henderson.
Hmm? Oh, really?
John Henderson is the only one. He had like 111 yards. I think I had him ranked number two. Number one was Sammy White. He had the Vikings' all-purpose yardage record in the Super Bowl against the Raiders.
He got a lot of chance to return the ball.
170 yards because he was returning and receiving, but mostly because he survived that game after getting hit in a then-legal helmet-to-helmet by Jack Tatum that almost tore his head off. And he survived that hit. Anytime you see footage of Super Bowl XI, that's the one shot you see. And then Tatum lording over him like he had...
This was only
about a year before Daryl Stingley was paralyzed by the same.
Sammy was a rookie that year. He was rookie of the year that year.
He was rookie of the year.
Did Sammy stutter before the hit?
I don't know.
Sammy, he was a great guy, but he did have he's talked about it.
I would think he was stuttering in the moments after. The photo I found from the Associated Press is not mid-hit, but it's after the hit. The helmet is already off White, and you could see the look on his face. It's like he's not even there. It's like
that was the same.
Like a mannequin.
That was the year of the best Sammy White moment when he stood a touchdown celebration 10 yards before the end zone, and then the Detroit player snuck up on him, knocked the ball out of his hand. They fumbled it for a touchback. He forgot where the end zone was. He was starting to celebrate and realized that he was 10 yards in front of the end zone.
That's
when he
a Viking for
the DeSean Jackson move, right? Uh-huh.
My favorite in this list is I have Wally Hilgenberg, number 8, because in Super Bowl 8, he got penalized for a cheap shot. He elbowed through the face mask and, like, I don't know if he broke the nose of Larry Zonka, but messed it up or whatever, bloodied his nose. And after the game, they asked Zonka about it. He says, well, it was a cheap shot, all right, but, you know, it showed how much he cared.
Brian Miller will be in Fargo on Tuesday.
Oh, and also, they just announced I'm going to be part of the Crash and Burn show at Acme April 4th to 8th. That is where it'll be me and 3 other headliners. And we'll each, on the Tuesday show, we'll each have to do 20 minutes of comedy we've never said out loud before in our entire lives.
You have to write new comedy?
It has to be completely new. We can't even work it out one
new
time.
New to you or new to someone else?
Yeah, that's true.
You can just do George Lopez's routine from the other night.
It's been a crowd test. Yeah. So you get it, and then over the course of the week, you work on it with the other writers, and then by Saturday, you're supposed to have 20 polished minutes off notebook. Totally clean. So it's an interesting.
That's a great concept.
It's a fun show. It's kind of.
It almost sounds like a reality show in waiting.
It kind of. Yeah. There you go. They haven't announced 2 of the other headliners, but the guy who created it is a Tim Slagle, and he'll be.
Oh.
ESPN with the show, that stupid show they had, competitive banter. Why can't you have competitive stand up?
Sure.
Why just not? Like, well, they had that sort of, didn't they?
Like a rap battle, but just comedians.
They do roast battle.
Yeah,
that's kind of the same thing, right?
Well, we're looking forward to that. We'll have to talk much more about it as
it'll be they're rolling out the announcements, and I was the first one.
Well, do you have some material that you've been wanting to try out, and you'll save now until then?
I've got a notebook. I'm cooking on it right now because I want to get at least 20 or 30 minutes of stuff ready before I want to be over prepared.
Not a bad idea.
Isn't that a lot though?
It's a ton.
Because I always remember seeing like the documentaries of like the great stand-ups in the 70s and 80s, and they always talk about having like 10 minutes, having their good, reliable 10 that they could always go to.
But that's been changing. You know, comedy's evolved now to where the Louis C.K. model is when at the highest level, you throw your hour out and do a new hour every year. Mm-hmm. Because back in the day, there wasn't as much TV. You know, you could parse that 10 minutes out over and over all these gigs. Now everybody's online. They've seen your stuff. What do you got new for me? It's just constant new
Joe
generation.
Rogan plus goes it's on more forever.
Plus it's more conversational now than it was in the day where it was just joke, pause.
Although, you know, like I write
Dancer with audience
I write 50 news jokes a week, every week, just as practice, like monologue jokes. And then for Kostaki, like 30. So I'm writing 80 jokes a week just to start the day. So, I don't know.
Most of us are still asleep, and you're on your 15th joke.
Yes, I write more jokes before noon than most people do all day.
And now, Tom Schreier, coldomaha.com. Do you mind me bringing up to John Tower?
I think that's a great idea, and we are trying to do some UST stuff.
He's the perfect guy to do it because he's well-spoken. He's an author. Speaking of authors, Jeff O'Brien from Jeff O'Brien. Today.
Jeffrey O'Brien,
excuse me, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, not the fancy English
Jeff O'Brien's
spelling.
Thing is garbage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got to get the Jeffrey.
And now, is there a what date are you shooting for the book to be out?
Sometime like late fall.
Okay.
We'll see how it goes.
And is the other person really done writing their half yet?
Yeah, it's an adaptation. Like I said, my attorney friend wrote a similar book, the first book for California. I'm taking and adapting. There's parts of it because when you get into like every state regulates its own liquor industry.
Yep.
So there's things in a nice little checklist and step-by-steps regarding the state process that you have to, in terms of forming an entity or filing for your license, that you have to, it's Minnesota
about
specific.
Being a craft brewery.
So I'm going to be taking out the stuff that she did on the California and putting in what we do here in Minnesota. So that's why I say it's about half. We figure by the time I'm done, it's going to be about a 50-50 collaboration.
Promotional idea, you got to have a brewery create a brew just for the release of the book that's like the same name as the book or something that ties into it.
I was thinking I was going to have one of them do Legal Lager.
Yeah, there you go. And then you got the release party.
It'd be bitter.
It's a release party for the book and the beer.
Bitter finish.
Yeah.
or fall angst.
All right, thank you to you guys. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you to John Tower and Ruth Lorden. We'll talk to you later. I just got to tell you, anyway.